You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman. March Madness is over. It was a lot of fun those 3 weeks, watching a lot of basketball. It's spring football time, Bruce. Everybody, almost everybody's practicing now. And one powerhouse, Clemson, is done. Had their spring game on Saturday. Kind of crazy. I thought maybe we could talk to our Clemson writer, Grace Rayner, about what's going on with the preseason. I'm sure they'll be preseason number one or two team.
You should know. Didn't you not do like a preseason way too early top 25? Where did you have the Tigers?
Let's see. Well, that was back the in early January, right after the title game. I believe I had it Alabama 1, Clemson 2. But I think they ended up having a bunch of guys come back that I wasn't expecting. So tease to the readers when I do the next one in a few weeks might be a change.
Wait, are you telling me Travis Etienne decided to stay again?
Well, Grace can tell us better. She knows better. She's been at practice. She can tell us who to expect to see suit up for the Tigers this year. And let's bring her on now. All right, Bruce, we're pleased to be joined now by our colleague Grace Rayner, the excellent beat writer for the Clemson Tigers, who just so happens to be joining us fresh off a big life event, maybe 90 minutes ago.
Yes, I am officially vaccinated.
Yay!
So no side effects, Grace?
No side effects yet. I will let you know in 2 hours when we get off this podcast.
Pfizer or Moderna?
I got Moderna.
So Bruce and I are both, I got my first shot a few weeks ago. I'm about to get my second one, and Bruce as well. I'm Moderna, you, Bruce?
I am. I'm a little further behind you in the process, so.
Yeah. What's crazy about the whole vaccination thing is it's like a big game how to try to get the appointment in the first place. I think we all have our stories of how we pulled it off.
Yeah, I got mine.
Grace, you said yours is a connect. Yeah.
Yeah, I got a Clemson fan helped me out and slid into my DMs and basically said, here's a waste list if you're interested. And I was like, okay. He's like, just call, the Walmart and say you want to be on this waste list. So I did, didn't think anything of it. And then 6 days later, Walmart calls me and was like, we have an opening. So I go, but here's the kicker. I mean, luckily it was not a big deal, but I still had to prove that I was eligible and needy in South Carolina. It was that phase, so I was fine. But I had to prove to this woman that I was a journalist. So I just pulled up my Twitter bio and I was like, I mean, here's a byline. Will this work? And I showed her a story I'd written on CJ Spiller. She's like, okay, cool. That's fine.
Did she go, you know what, Grace, this is a pretty wordy headline. You sure? this is you.
I wondered about that, about these states that are including media in terms of how do you prove that you're media? And I mean, does anybody with a podcast count as media? They didn't ask any questions at the CVS in Newark, California. I actually helped Bruce figure out how to get a shot.
I don't know if I would say you did that, but somebody had basically told me a little what Gray said. I didn't you hear the term waste list? That when she first said it, I was like, did she misspeak?
I thought you meant wait
list. Does she have a lisp all of a sudden? It's I thought you meant wait list. But so I had heard from a friend of a place that is ends up with a lot of extra seems to. And if you wait long enough in line, if you go there long enough, and the line was, when I went, was a couple hundred deep And it was half a day. It was just a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, at one point, Stu had said, I have a friend who's heard of a place. And it turned out, I was like, ooh, it was the same place. And so if you, I don't know, I'd heard plenty of stories about people saying, yeah, if you go to, you know, your local CVS and get on a list, that wasn't happening where I live. Like, there just weren't places that I had heard of or called that, no, our list is 7 pages deep. And that was the one or two places that said they had it. Most of them didn't even have it. So when I found this one place and I got to the back of the line, I was like, oof, this is probably not going to work. And, you know, fortunately for me that day, they had that many extra.
Well, I think, yeah, all around, you know, you're hearing about more and more people that have gotten it. I think we're up to like 50% of adults in the country have gotten at least the first dose. And it's making us all feel like normal is coming back. You, Grace, you posted a picture from the Clemson spring game the other day, and it just looked like a Saturday in the fall.
It felt like the most normal, I mean, obviously in over a year. I mean, it was, people were quasi tailgating and it was, you know, smaller than usual, but yeah, it was a beautiful day and it just felt like, okay, we can breathe again. Like maybe we're on our way out of this.
So that day, I was not fortunate enough to have the Clemson game on my TV, but you were there. It's actually one of the rare times where I was like, okay, I like the updates. It's like, it's not NCAA baseball coverage popping up on my timeline, but it was still kind of refreshing to follow along. So what were your biggest takeaways from what you saw last Saturday from a team that we now, it's like we're surprised if they're not going to be a playoff team?
So yeah, I think the biggest thing we all wanted to see was DJ Uiagalelei. It was obviously a little weird not seeing Trevor Lawrence for the first time in several years. And just really knowing that this is DJ's team. And I think my biggest takeaway, I mean, there was some news that came out of the spring game, which was obviously Tyson Pumichon. It looks like he tore his Achilles. So Clemson is going to have some backup quarterback needs to address this offseason. But I think the biggest thing when you look at DJ, and Dabo Swinney was talking about this afterwards, was that DJ had a really strong spring. He's a great player, but Clemson wants him to be an elite player. Clemson wants him to take this offseason and really take the next step. So I think Clemson still has questions at a couple of positions. We were all curious about what the offensive line would look like. They only had 3 scholarship cornerbacks playing, so that was a little odd. But DJ was the one I think we all wanted to see, as well as what do these running backs look like now that Travis Etienne is not there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've just always taken it for, well, not always, but for several years now, we've just taken it for granted that they're going to score a million points because they had Travis Etienne, T. Higgins, at one point Justin Ross, and we'll talk about that in a second, Amari Rodgers. Like, they're going to have a great offense. And listening to you describe it and knowing that Etienne's gone, I mean, do you feel like there are actually question marks on offense this year?
I feel like there are. I don't know if it's as concerning as question marks, but I do think that there are places where we're all curious. I mean, running back, I think once we watch the spring game, I'm not going to be surprised if Clemson kind of rotates these guys by committee. I don't think that anyone has really taken on that Travis-like role. I think that the offensive line, I mean, Dabo was very honest about the offensive line in 2020, and he basically said, you know, ideally we can rotate 10 or 11 guys. This year, or last year, he rotated 6. So I think there's some question marks. I think they'll figure it out. We have no reason to doubt that Clemson will come up with something, but I do think it will look different for the first time in a while.
Back to the podcast in a second, but Bruce, even this late into the spring, you know, we're still seeing college football programs hiring staff members, support staff members, analysts, GAs, whatnot. Hope they've been using LinkedIn Jobs, because if you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to post your job for free at linkedin.com/audible. That's linkedin.com/audible to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Grace, I remembered, it feels like forever ago, but it was like Frank Lyotson, Joseph Ngata. I feel like there was a third really young kind of freaky receiver they had. So in that next batch of guys, who is one that you'd like, okay, this is the next one who's going to be, who you would predict would be a kind of a breakout star?
I would say, if you're asking me, I would say E.J. Williams. If you're asking Dabo Swinney, he would say Joseph Ngata. Ngata's a guy that Dabo has been talking about almost nonstop for 2 years, and we just haven't seen it yet. He had a pretty quiet freshman season, and then he had this abdominal strain his sophomore year that really hampered him. And so we keep hearing Ngata, Ngata, Ngata. So I want to see that. But E.J. Williams, to me, he's obviously had to step up big time last year as a true freshman. We saw him kind of come into his own late in the season. He comes from the same high school as Justin Ross. He just kind of feels like that next big time deep ball outside receiver that will eventually be a first round pick and the factory continues.
I mean, I feel like people have forgotten about Justin Ross. He was only the, you know, breakout star of their last national championship win as a freshman. And then he had a big sophomore year. And then he had an unfortunate injury that I want you to fill us in on a little bit. And he missed all of last season. And we're not even sure yet for sure whether he's going to play. But, I mean, we're talking about an All-American type player. That, to me, it seems like would completely change their complexion if he could play.
For sure, for sure. I mean, so he, this time about a year ago, he finds out in spring practice, he goes down and they think it's a stinger. They, you know, do the typical x-ray. And basically the team doctor comes back to Dabo, I think the next day, and is like really stunned by what he sees on this x-ray when he was looking at Justin's spine. And so long story short, Justin was born with this fusion in his spine that he didn't know about. And he... doctor, at least from what I've been told from doctors, is that people with congenital fusions are at a higher risk for bulging discs. And Justin did indeed have a bulging disc. So it's possible that he could have developed that, you know, organically anyway, separate of the fusion. But he had surgery on his bulging disc last June. Then he started to kind of work his way back, started running again, lifting weights, got back into practice. No contact whatsoever, obviously. And this spring, he's been non-contact the whole time. And so that's kind of the final check mark and the final benchmark, if you will, is Justin will go back to Pittsburgh in late May, early June, meet with his doctor, Dr. Okonkwo, who basically is going to tell him, yes, you can play again, or this is not safe, or it's the final verdict is supposed to come in June. And then Clemson would, if he's cleared, would make him a contact participant in fall camp.
Wow. You know, it's given all that I feel like went on last year beyond the football field, just pandemic related. It's like, you know, as you were going through the story, I kind of knew a little of it. I didn't know a lot of it, I'll be honest, until, you know, kind of hearing that update. I'm curious, you've covered the team for a decent amount of time now. I feel like the arc of Clemson for, and this is predates you on the beat, I feel like, was there was that term Clemsoning, right? It was, you know, it's not a favorable one. And then they became the program that was fun and doing, it was like kind of the alternative to Alabama, having a lot of success and, you know, this kind of really portrayed as a family vibe and everything. And I feel like there was, you know, I remember hearing Dabo's little old Clemson comments. So, you know, you cover the team and you're around it, but you also see kind of the arc of it. What is the vibe around Clemson football right now coming out of last season? Trevor's moved on. It's like I guess I would ask is like, how do you think either the identity or the perception of Clemson has moved or changed much in the last couple of years?
Obviously, I think Clemson since 2015 has established itself on this national stage. We all know what they're capable of doing. I do think that you look at this 2021 roster in a little bit of a different way than you have in the past, because they are having to start over in a way they haven't had to in a while. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence was there. We all saw what he did as a true freshman, and then you felt pretty good about Clemson with an older Trevor Lawrence as a sophomore and then certainly as a junior. Same with Travis Etienne when he decided to return. But I look at this Clemson team and I think the expectations are still the same. I just think that it's just built a little bit differently. The entire defense is back minus Darian Kendrick. But offensively, you've got a new quarterback, you got a new running back. Do you get Justin Ross back, or what? How do you rotate your wide receivers? What does your offensive line look like? Do you have some functional depth there? So I think this time in what, 7 or 8 months, we're probably talking about Clemson in the playoff again, but it is going to be a different looking team that is expected to get them there.
I don't know that this was where Bruce was going with it, but to me, the perception of Clemson hasn't really changed. The perception of Dabo has changed. And you and I have talked about this offline, if you will, but like, I just feel like he's gone from when they first rose up and first, you know, almost beat Alabama and then beat Alabama. It was like, wow, he's the fun coach. He's the BYOG guy. He's the refreshing antidote to Mr. All Business Saban. And at some point, he became villainous. And I would just say last year in particular, he was kind of insufferable at times with, you know, the Florida State situation and then the just ridiculous insistence on ranking Ohio State 11th, which totally blew up in his face. So you've been like, has he changed? You're around him much more than we are. Has he changed, or is like the non-Clemson public kind of like starting to, you know, he's on a bigger stage now. He's more scrutinized and we're starting to see these things.
I think that he hasn't changed much, but his program keeps winning. And so if the beginning of him was little old Clemson, the underdog, we're kind of lucky to be here type vibe, and that hasn't changed. But what has changed is that Clemson's won 2 national championships. They've been in 6 straight college football playoffs. I think that that's where he's kind of lost people nationally, is because everyone loves a good underdog story. Clemson's not an underdog. They were, but they are not.
As much as he tries to claim that they are.
Right, exactly. So I think he lost some people there. And then obviously the Ohio State thing, he stood by it. Right after the game, he got asked about it. You heard it. Like, do you regret this? And, you know, he stood by it. But I think Dabo has always been himself, and that's why people love him at Clemson. It's why his players love playing for him, his staff loves working for him. And I don't know how much he really cares about the outside perception.
We didn't even mention the T-shirt and all.
Right.
And everything that came out of that. But, yeah, I just feel like this happens anytime a team – I mean, I remember being out here when the Warriors first started winning championships. At first, they were Steph Curry was so fun, and they were the lovable team. Then they got Durant, and it just flipped. Like, now everybody was rooting against them. And so I'm sure that's happened to them to some extent, but it has been interesting from an outsider's perspective to see, in particular, how people have latched on to Dabo in that way. But in terms of the football, look, I mean, I'm sure college football is very knee-jerk, and I'm sure there's people who say, okay, they got blown out against LSU, they got blown out against Ohio State, the whole thing's falling apart. I don't know. They may still be my preseason number one team. I haven't decided yet. But because in particular, so I did that early top 25. It goes up the day after the game. We didn't know yet who was or wasn't turning pro. And I feel like, did anybody there think James Skalski was going to come back for a 6th year?
I certainly didn't. It's funny, though, because in hindsight, I was talking to Skalski's mom right before the playoff, and she made a joke at the very end of our conversation about, yeah, I always tell him, stay in school as long as you can. It's the best time of your life. And then and then he returns, and I was like, wow, he obviously took this pretty seriously. But no, I don't think any of us thought we would see Skalski or Nolan Turner back.
All right, let's get out on something completely non-Clemson. I don't know if our listeners will appreciate it or not. Grace is the biggest Taylor Swift fan I know, or at least tied with a couple other people on our staff. And so she's doing this thing now where she's re-releasing her old songs, which I love it, solely to get back at the guy who bought her catalog and, well, I'm just going to re-record the songs and then, you know, your thing that you just spent all this money on is worthless now. So what's the early review?
Oh, man, loving it. I think the only person on our staff who's, like, more insane than me with Taylor Swift is probably Tori McElhaney, our Falcons writer. But, yeah, I think it's been such a fun project to see her go back in time with her 31-year-old vocals but her 16-year-old songwriting. And she's kind of going into the vault and releasing songs that didn't make the cut the first time. That's what happened this week. I am all for it. The full album comes out Friday, and I have literally been counting down the days to this.
Full disclosure, we weren't going to mention this, but Bruce had to cut out a few questions ago. If he were still on here, either I wouldn't have said it, or he would be just rolling his eyes right now. I don't think he is. I don't think Taylor falls in his wheelhouse, but does mine. You know, I'm not ashamed to say that I went to the 1989 tour, and now I've got a 5-year-old who wants to be Taylor Swift. So we hear her music in this house all the time.
You have great taste, and I'm very excited. I'll probably be blowing your phone up this weekend with text messages to, like, live through this with your 5-year-old, because obviously this album came out well before she was alive. So now that she's going to get to experience this for the first time, I'm in.
I also just think it's cool that she's, like, I thought she kind of went in the wrong direction with that. What was the album after 1989?
Reputation.
Where she just went full on pop star, and not, I mean, she's just a great songwriter and a great musician, and she just went totally away from that. So now with the two albums that came out during the pandemic, and now that the stuff she's re-releasing, it's like, oh yeah, she's really good.
She is. Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm biased, but I think she's the greatest songwriter of my generation for sure.
Well, anytime you can talk Justin Ross and Taylor Swift on the same podcast,
that's a win.
Give us that 5-star rush to give us that 5-star rating, because I know you're feeling it right now. All right, Grace, congrats on getting vaccinated.
Thank you.
And congrats. I think our first beat writer who's already made it through spring practice. Some of them haven't even started yet.
That's wild. That's wild.
Yeah. Stanford out here doesn't even start practice till April 27th. So you already got to see a spring game.
Yep. I sure did. It was great.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for having me.
We'll talk to you soon. All right. It is mailbag time. As always, send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Mark Weaver starts us out with a timely one, albeit about the team that lost Monday night. Hi, Stu and Bruce. I listened with interest to your discussion about Gonzaga breaking through in basketball and how college football is more favorable to blue bloods. You discussed whether Iowa State could ever compete for a title and how there are built-in obstacles in college football to prevent that type of program growth. But I think there are actually two programs that have ascended in the last 20 years. Oregon had a mostly forgettable history prior to their run over the last 20 years. In 2011, they were Dyer's knee away from winning the championship and made another in 2014. Side note, I believe Dyer's knee, if that would have gone to overtime, right? It was a tie game at that point. They're now recruiting well under Mario Cristobal and seem poised to be a top 10 team again in the coming years. And Clemson, while they had a good run back in the 80s, did not have much besides that, similar to one-time champions like Colorado or Georgia Tech in the 90s. Now Clemson's an absolute powerhouse of the sport. Why did these teams succeed? Why did they break through, Bruce?
I think in Clemson's case, it was great timing and fortunate that Dabo Sweeney turned out to be a great fit there. I think he made some pretty shrewd hires along the way. Certainly, I think Chad Morris as his OC helped at that point. And obviously Brent Venables, who I think if you looked back, if I had told you, Stu, as somebody who covered a lot of Red River games and everything, had told you like in 2011 that Brent Venables was going to be the best defensive coordinator of the last, I don't know, 5 years, would you have been shocked?
It would have just been I don't know if I would have been shocked. It just wouldn't have made sense. I don't think he was.
He wasn't bad, but it wasn't just like, it was like, you know, he and Mike Stoops shared the job under Bob, and Bob's obviously a defensive guy, and they had some good years, and he was obviously known as a really good recruiter. It's just like, I think he was there was a few things that obviously happened. I think Taj Boyd kind of helped lay a foundation, and then obviously Deshaun Watson elevated it, and then it just kept growing from there. And I think that there was a lot of buy-in from a lot of people. It was unique, but, and this is a little bit of the issue I would kind of take with Mark's question is, I mean, Clemson did win a national title in the 80s, and it wasn't like Gonzaga had never been ranked in the top 20 ever before 2000. Like, Clemson had been very good. I mean, they had a legendary head coach. There was just, to me, Clemson's football history, was it blue blood like Nebraska, Oklahoma, Notre Dame? No, but it was still a pretty storied history of success. And that's why I'm like, eh. And even, you know, with Oregon, I agree with what he said. To me, that's a closer connection. But Bilotti built it up. Then obviously Chip took it to a whole nother level.
Well, wait, let's give Rich Brooks some credit for Rose Bowl season.
Yeah, I think there was some success. It just, to me, that's why the Iowa State thing made a little more sense. But I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the closest thing to a Gonzaga type breakthrough, Boise? I think, would be
Boise.
Yeah, well, there's, okay, so he's, if you're including the Power Five, and we can debate whether you should be allowed to do that in a Gonzaga parallel, to me, the closest would be Kansas State. And kind of like Gonzaga the other night, like, they came awfully close to playing for a national title in 1998, and after being the worst program in the country prior to Bill Snyder getting there. But with Clemson, I would say, the better question is, why weren't they better before that? They had all the, you know, they're in the part of the country that breeds football success, huge fan support, Death Valley's rocking. Like, to me, it was more like, why were they so mediocre for so long than how did they end up becoming what they did? Oregon definitely had a harder road. I mean, you know, stuck up in the Pacific Northwest, not a lot of great recruits up there, and the Pac-10, Pac-8 back in the day was really just, for the most part, the California schools. Washington had their run under Don James. So now, all that being said, I still think if you're talking a Gonzaga of college football, it's got to be, like you said, a Boise State. And unfortunately, it's just not possible. I mean, the way Gonzaga became Gonzaga is, and I remember it, they three straight Sweet 16s in the first part of this century. Getting in, showing they could compete with the big boys, and then you kind of build from there. Right now, they were able to, you know, now suddenly the Michigan States of the world wanted to play them in non-conference because it could help their resume, and then they start getting better players and better players. And I think of Adam Morrison being like a kind of a turning point player for them to have one of the best players in the country that year, so on. So if you go back to Boise State when Kellen Moore was there, that was their equivalent to that early Gonzaga run. But then they couldn't go anywhere from there because there's no tournament for them to go in and actually prove themselves. So unfortunately, there's a ceiling right now. If we were to expand the thing and have automatic entry for a group of five, then maybe you could build yourself into, you know, go from being a mid-major to build yourself into a team that could compete for the national championship. But that avenue doesn't exist.
I also think there is a obviously some big distinctions between the sport of football and the sport of college basketball. I mean, in college basketball, you can have two or three really, really good players who are NBA players, and it makes a difference. In college football, you need a lot more than that. Also, because college football is so much more of a developmental sport, it's kind of lives in a different orbit, meaning with the rules that the NCAA and the NBA kind of are tied to now, you have one and dones, where a lot of times your most talented athletes who could be ready to be program changers from the moment they put, you know, go into the locker room, are different in basketball. That's not the way it is in college football. It's almost impossible to find like a transcendent or even a transformative college football player from day one. As great a career as Reggie Bush had at USC, and he was a, you know, a legendary player, Reggie Bush was a role player really his freshman year, and even to some degree even for maybe his second year. You know, you just, a lot of guys who win Heismans aren't Heisman Trophy caliber guys from the time they get there. So, you know, you're basically taking the most talented guys, almost most of them, out of the picture after 1 year. So I think it's just, it's a different dynamic as it relates to, you know, how, like if you go through, I watch a lot of NBA. There are so many tremendous NBA players who played at Kentucky. They didn't play it there. They didn't play for John Calipari all that long, though. But they were there for a year. And if somehow, if they would have stayed, first of all, they would have had such a backlog because you would have had, you know, 24 great players in a four-year stretch or whatever. It's like they would transfer anyway, probably. But the point is, like in college football, you can do some of that, you know, as Alabama certainly does, to some degree Ohio State and Clemson have done. But it's just different in college basketball with the development piece, as well as with the one and done, and how you can get guys going.
You know who Gonzaga is kind of like? Because for the most part, their players are these developmental guys that, like, Corey Kispert's been there for 4 or 5 years, right? He didn't come in, like you said, and score 20 points a game right off the bat. And
Rui Hachimura, he's with the Wizards now. He was there, what, 2 years?
I covered them in the NCAA tournament his freshman year. He barely played. He was just kind of like a novelty.
But then two years later, he was
their star player. Yeah. So, however, they took that core, and now they have the ability to add Jalen Suggs, who may end up being the number one pick in the draft, right? So if Wisconsin, which is all about development, and could reach the point where they could have the kind of roster they have now, but then just like throw Justin Fields on top of it, maybe they could have that kind of run. But yeah, the two sports just aren't quite similar. But give credit to Oregon. I think they, more than any program since I've been covering this sport, just completely redefined their brand. I mean, Oregon pre-crazy uniforms, pre-Joey Harrington billboard, I didn't really have an identity, right? So now they're very unique. Everybody associates them with the uniforms and the offenses, and it's just a completely different program, just like Clemson has. All right, Nathan in Boulder, Colorado. Bruce and Stu, love the podcast. My request is inspired by the excellent question last week. He's referring to the one where we had to pick between two teams who was going to do better. All right, considering the next 5 seasons, please choose which of the following college football possibilities is most likely and which is least likely. Here we go. A Big Ten school other than Ohio State wins a national championship. Alabama and Clemson combine for 3 championships. A Big 12 school wins a national championship. Michigan wins more than 1 game against Ohio State. Any Pac-12 school wins more than 2 conference championships. And Miami wins more ACC championships than Clemson. Those are good.
Yeah, there's a lot to pour through.
I mean, I think the least likely is pretty easy for me. It's that last one. Miami wins more ACC championships than Clemson.
Yeah, I think if he had said Miami wins an ACC championship, I would say, yeah, I could see that happening. Miami wins more than Clemson seems pretty far-fetched. Let's go through. How about this? Love your question, Nathan. I'm going to tweak it a little bit. Here we go, Stu. We're going to put percentages on these.
Love percentages.
Yeah, for a guy who probably failed every statistic and math class he ever took. It's weird how I liked it. Okay, here we go. Okay, so the chance that Miami wins an ACC championship in the next 5 years, percent?
20%.
I will say 35%. Okay. Any Pac-12 school wins more than 2 conference titles. So that means a USC emerging, or I guess...
No, he said any Pac-12 school, and I feel like...
No, I know, but it's like where it's like, what was the USC Pete Carroll run? You just haven't seen something like that. That's
how I don't think this is all that unrealistic. If you told me that Oregon's going to win 3 of the next 5, I would say that's totally believable. Not easy. So we'll say 35%.
I will say 25%.
Okay.
Michigan wins more than one game against Ohio State in the next 5 years.
The only way I see that happening is if Ryan Day leaves for the NFL and they hire like Houston Nutt as his replacement.
Yes, because that would happen. Totally hire Houston.
Totally screw the next one. I would put that Michigan wins more than one game. I'll put that at 15%.
That's kind of where I was going to go. I wasn't going to make it as far-fetched as what you said, you know, like the Houston Nutt kind of nature of it, but I would say somewhere between 15 and 20%.
It's not to say that they couldn't win a game, but if they win more than one, then I feel like things have more evened out, and it just doesn't feel like that's going to happen immediately. A Big 12 school wins a national championship seems totally plausible to me, the most likely one being Oklahoma. I will put that at 40%.
Okay. I will put that at 33%.
Alabama and Clemson combined. So just to be clear, these don't have to add up, right?
Right.
Like, no, if you were to add up the percentages we're giving here, it wouldn't make any sense. But we're treating each one as an individual event. Alabama and Clemson combine for 3 national championships. 50%?
I will say 60%.
So more likely than not that, yes, Alabama and Clemson win 3 of the next 5 championships.
Yeah, look, it wouldn't shock me if Alabama won 3 of them by themselves.
Yeah. Something's got to give at some point. This cycle won't continue forever, but we're only talking 5 years here. In a Big Ten school other than Ohio State wins a national championship, I really feel like there's only one that I would even give a shot to doing that in the next 5 years, and that's Penn State.
So what percentage would you give Penn State of doing that?
7%.
Ooh, that's low. I know you're a big Mr. Recruiter. They have like the number 5 or 6 ranked class right now in 2022, so... I will say 13%.
There you go. By the way, all of our conference writers have done follow-up takes on our top 25 coaches in terms of the coaches in their own conference. And for the record, Audrey Snyder said that who covers Penn State, said the proper ranking of James Franklin is somewhere between your number 5 and my number 17. So maybe more like 10, 11, something like that.
Okay. Does she have the tricky part?
She didn't give a number. Yeah. She just said she thought it was somewhere in between the two.
Okay. All right, Stu, the next question is from Matt Akers. Stu and Bruce, I listened to your conversation with UCLA AD Martin Jarmond. His answer on how to restore Pac-12 to football respectability seems to overlook an area where the Pac-12 seems to lag behind other conferences. Coaching salaries. It seems to me that the disparity in salaries for head coaches as well as assistant coaches needs to be addressed if Pac-12 programs want to hire and retain great coaching staffs. In my opinion, this disparity is exacerbated by a higher cost of living on the West Coast when compared to other regions of the country. Do you see the Pac-12 schools making a concerted effort to close this gap? I'd like to hear your thoughts. Sue, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a legit question. It's a legit point, but like, they can't magically conjure up more money tomorrow, right? So I don't know that they're going to be able to fully address that until the next TV contract, when there's an expectation, a hope that they'll see a big spike in revenue, conference revenue, since they haven't had one since 2012. In the meantime, I don't know that it's universal across the schools. I mean, I think
it's not.
You know, USC is not missing out on coaches because of what they pay them, right? Washington has put you know, Oregon, like they just bumped Mario Cristobal quite a bit. Now, the Arizonas, the Cals.
My understanding is Stanford is paying David Shaw quite a bit of money.
Yes. the Arizonas, the Cals, the Oregon States, I don't know that they can afford to pay a coordinator $1 million.
In Arizona's case, they have Don Brown, who, because of the way he was pushed out at Michigan, he is actually, you know, his salary structure is a little different. So you're getting a guy who was making a lot of money at Michigan, but is still being compensated by them. As it relates to some other schools, they're definitely, I think, where you see the challenges in the support staff issues, right? USC is the one place I know which is all in, and they have hired guys away and spent a lot of money, especially under when Mike Bone came on as AD. They really, he and Brandon Sosna, who's his number two, have really committed to putting a lot of resources into football administration and that sort of thing. Now the question's going to be, like, look, I think there's a natural lead here. Is what USC did not move on Clay Helton a year and a half ago because it was going to cost them like $45 or $50 million to get rid of him. Auburn, you know, like, paid a fortune to get out from under Gus Malzahn, and turned around and paid it fast. I think that's the part that, you know, is interesting to me, is some of these SEC programs, I think, will eat a lot of money to get rid of a mistake. One thing that I wanted to tag on to Matthew's question, years ago when Kevin Sumlin was a hot commodity as a coach, I remembered UCLA was interested, Arizona State was interested, and then Texas A&M came open. And I think the concern is not just on what the head coach is getting paid, because I think a lot of schools will pay for the head coach, but it was like, how much is it going to cost for my special teams coordinator? Like, how will the money go if you're making X in terms of the cost of living in Los Angeles? That was a real concern for some coaches. I know of another coach who is in a Power Five school who's very concerned about the money and how far it goes. And we've had some conversations about that. So I do think some of that is a real thing. But, you know, like you said, you can't just make the money out of nothing.
Yeah, and I do think Pac-12 schools are a little bit more hesitant to overpay. I think Washington fans, you know, were bummed that Texas hired away Pete Kwiatkowski, their DC, and they definitely threw money at him. He was making $1 million a year at Washington, which is, to me, seems like a perfectly respectable salary for a defensive coordinator. Texas is going to pay him $1.7 million. But, you know, he's been a good DC. I don't know that he's like Brent Venables. I mean, is $1.7 million really necessary to hire him, or can Texas just do that because they have the money and they can just throw it at him?
I think that's a complicated question, to be honest.
The thing I always remember is when Arizona State, before they hired Herman, after they fired Todd Graham, they had a press conference, and Michael Crow, the president of ASU, said something to the effect of, you know, we're never going to be like the SEC. Like, we're never, he didn't, this is not exact words, kind of paraphrase. We're not going to throw money around at coaches like they do in the SEC. And it was like, as if he was proud of that. And it's like, okay, well, that's a nice principled stand to take, but it's not going to help you win national championships. It's a combination. It's, some of it's philosophical, but some of it is just flat out they can't afford it. And it's going to be a few years probably before they can tangibly address that. Craig in Detroit. Hey guys, thinking about next season and the way you and the staff have changed your process covering and reporting games and teams. I love it, by the way, and I think the Athletic content has surpassed the gold standard of SI in my youth. That is a high compliment. We thank you. And also remind everybody that if you want to read the gold standard of SI in your youth, theathletic.com/theaudible for a discounted rate on your subscription to The Athletic. His question, the pandemic has impacted your work process, like many of us. What in your jobs will go back to 2019 and what stays 2020?
This is a good question. And
it is.
I mean, I'm thinking about it just as, you know, okay. Like, for me, I have to separate it in terms of my week coverage in the fall is really dictated by my other employer, Fox. So if I am on the road as a sideline reporter, it's different. Or if I'm in studio as a studio reporter for Big Noon Kickoff, it's those are two very different things. I think in as it relates to like the off season, I'd like to think, and I'm just, you know, I'm curious what you think of this too, Stu. I would like to think that the last, hopefully, knock on wood, event that will kind of not be the same as what it's going to be, what it used to be, is that every May there would be the conference meetings in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it was a great place to see ADs and coaches from most conferences, not the SEC, but pretty much everybody else would convene there. They didn't have that, obviously, last year. It won't be that way this year. I would like to think that would be the last event that will kind of be from the 2020 pandemic piece of it. You know, like, I know you used to go to, like, SEC Media Days, and I feel like you probably stopped doing that a couple of years before the pandemic. Like, will you go to Conference Media Days?
No, I was going to SEC Media Days up until probably the year before that. I don't know about this summer, but I don't know how many of them will have Media Days this summer. I don't know that we're quite there yet. We'll see. I think that my if I had to guess, I probably, like, I'm eager, don't get me wrong, I'm eager to go to some games this fall, and you know, I miss being at games, I miss live sporting events. But I don't know, from a just purely work standpoint, if I'll ever go back to going to games, to as many games as I used to, because I don't feel like it affected my coverage that much last year to cover it on TV. I don't know if that's the best use of dollars and cents. And that may be something that some of our colleagues decide, you know, out in or outside the Athletic as well. But maybe I spend more time traveling in the off season because I'm trying to make up for 2 years of, I was just saying to somebody the other day, like, spring football to me is the best time to go visit campuses. It's more relaxed than once they get into season mode, and you can get good face time with the coaches and players. And now I'm missing out on two of them, 2 years in a row. By the time we get to next spring, it'll, you know, have been 3 years since I did that. So I feel like I want to make up for lost time and get out on the road.
So do you think you will go on the road in August?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, assuming that kind of stuff is happening again, we are seeing, it's interesting. I saw, well, first of all, Mitch Sherman, our Nebraska writer, has been tweeting a lot of photos of these post-practice availabilities they're doing. They look just like pre-COVID, except everybody's wearing masks. And then I just happened to notice today there were a bunch of new basketball coaches being introduced, you know, press conferences, like Oklahoma with Porter Moser. And they're not on Zoom anymore. They're actual press conferences. So we are making progress.
Yeah, I am very excited about the idea of just that. I mean, you know, the stuff I miss the most about just being a sideline reporter was, you know, the meetings of in person or talking to coaches right before the games. And I don't know. It's been a while, right? And so I'm trying to think, like, you know, I think there's, like, again, it's, you said it, I don't know, I imagine the conferences will be back up and open to conference media days, I think. Yeah.
This summer?
What?
I think the SEC will absolutely do one because it's such a big event to them. It's like, you know, a huge, huge event, a huge, like, moment on the calendar. They did say there are spring Destin meetings they're doing virtually, but I would imagine there'll be some sort of media.
You don't think the Big Ten will have one in Chicago?
I could be wrong. I don't think the Big Ten will have one. I don't think the Pac-12 will have one. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, I'll tell you
what. It's only April. Who knows?
If the Mountain West is teeing it back up in Vegas, you're going, I'm going. We're both going.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. But is there anything else, though? Like, we mostly just talked about travel. Is there anything else that you've started doing in the last year that you are going to continue?
No, I mean, I really don't. I don't like Zooms at all. It's just like, one thing that I've noticed is if I do podcast, like if I'm a guest on somebody's podcast, it's like, now it's a Zoom, and I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, I would just assume it'd be a phone, you know, like over the phone kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
but I don't know. There's, I mean, for me, so much of my job is still over the phone and stuff like that. So, like, that didn't change. The part that just changed was me being able to, like, I used to go on the road and really go, like, to, like, 10 schools in the spring. I would do these, like, 2 weeks and get in the car and go all over the place, or, you know. And I haven't been able to do that. So, and I, look, I'm not complaining about it. It's just that kind of part of it is different, you know. So I don't know. It's a big TBD. I'd love to have a more of a defined answer. I do think, you know, like the conference media day element. One thing that I notice, and I'll use the SEC one as an example because it's the biggest one, is you actually get very little FaceTime with coaches and players. Even if you know them well and have, you just, it's just such a car wash for them. But the part I will miss is, you know, you get to see people you haven't seen in a while, right? And it's just, it's, I think there's, you know, if I work with you and we do this podcast, so I talk to you quite a bit. But just like, there's a lot of people that you just haven't seen that you normally see. And so that's the part where I'm like, you know, we do these Zooms and The Athletic is big enough where I'm like, oh, look, this is what Mitch Sherman's like living room looks like, or this is what, you know, it's like, and there's just a little bit of a connection there that you just don't have otherwise with people. And so that's the, that is something that, like, okay, you know, it's just, I think I will be grateful and appreciate more of the connection to people.
Yeah. We've actually started doing more staff Zoom calls. The staff wanted to do more. They wanted to see each other more often, and it's been cool. It's been fun. And so I'm fine with that aspect of Zoom living on. But, like, I don't know. I had to do a interview with a head coach the other day, and the SID asked if I wanted to do it over Zoom. And I was like, no, you can just call me. It's fine. We don't need to do Zoom. We're doing this podcast over Zoom, I should add. And I don't know. I have to ask the listeners. I feel like the quality of our conversations has improved a little bit now that we see each other. Instead of being, we used to interrupt each other a lot when we couldn't see each other.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, it's just a different dynamic, I guess. Like, I did something yesterday with, like, the Cleveland Browns, and it was one person I know a little and one person I had just met. And I was just like, it was a good conversation. It was just like, when you're on Zoom, it's like you feel like it's going on TV, you know? And it's like, if I'm scrambling around, the one thing that, maybe this is something that changes from the pandemic, I would never wear my glasses in public. It's been so long. And now I've gotten really used to, like, I rarely wear my contact lenses unless, like, I coach baseball, unless it's one of those days where we have a game or a practice, or it's somewhere where I know I'm going to be, like, out in public for a long period of time. But usually I just wear my glasses because it's real convenient. I wear a baseball hat, and I mean, I you can't tell, Stu, but there is, like, a full on mullet back here of hair that I haven't, you know, had a haircut in a while. It's just like, so I usually wear a baseball hat. It's like just this kind of, you know, it's funny, is like one of our friends, like, I forgot what I was, oh, we, I went out somewhere to meet up with somebody, and it was like, wow, I haven't seen you wear a collared shirt in forever. And I'm like, or pants. I'm like, yeah, it's like basically every day is workout clothes and a baseball hat.
It's true. It's been so long since I worried about what I look like in the morning. And I was just, you know, we just enrolled our daughter in kindergarten for the fall. And I was like, huh, I'm going to be dropping her off at school every day. I'm actually going to probably need to look presentable instead of the, you know, just roll out of bed and put on whatever, knowing that I'm not really going to see anybody other than you this day. So That'll probably be a more tangible change, frankly, than anything related to the coverage that he asked about.
Okay. Anything else we need to cover?
No, I think we're good. As always, send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll see you next time.